Okay, it's 16 minutes past 7. You are listening to Sabah al-Muslim on Radio Islam International. We cross over now to Bilal Abdul Karim, who's a journalist and a documentary maker. He talks to us live this morning from northern Syria. Bilal, jazakumullah for your time. Much appreciated. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. How is everybody back in Johannesburg?
Alhamdulillah, how are you?
Alhamdulillah, good, very good.
Now, what takes you to Syria and where are you currently?
Well, I'm, as you said, in northern Syria. And what brings me here is that there are stories that need to be covered and truths that I believe need to be told. Because of the situation for journalists, as everybody knows, how a lot of them ended up, many of them do not come. Therefore, we're totally reliant on journalists who get their stories from Twitter and Facebook. Now, people might think that what I just said was funny, or I said that as a joke, but it's not. But many of the stories which are reported that are regurgitated by other news outlets have their origins on Twitter. So therefore, when people are thinking that they're getting investigated news and they're journalists on the ground and they're reporting back, they're not.
What have you managed to uncover, which is contradictory of what's being reported on Twitter and by other news outlets, as you've just mentioned?
I mean, you know, it's a lot of different things. I remember just about 10 days ago that there was a story that was on Twitter, and it was from somebody who said, "I was near the Bab al-Hawa, a crossing, and some foreign fighter had tried to set off a car bomb, but he was caught." So when I heard this story, I had to go a very long distance to the Bab al-Hawa just so that I could try to cover the story with the director of the crossing. So when I went to go and see the director of the crossing, now keep in mind, the person said that I was there when this took place. So right away, the reader is going to think that this has credibility, because obviously this person was there. He didn't hear it himself. This is not second or third hand information. So when I went to go see the mudir, or the director of the crossing, I asked him, I said, "So what happened this morning?" So he looks at me and says, "What happened with what?" And I said, "There was an attempted car bombing here this morning." He said, "The car bombing here? What are you talking about?" And I said, "Well, it's all over Twitter." And he said, "There was no car bombing here." He didn't even know what I was talking about. So therefore, so many of the origins of these stories have no asal. They have no basis, no foundation.
What's the situation like currently in Syria, you know, compared to your previous visits? Is the tension still as high? Is the situation still as dire?
Well, I mean, when you have people that are being killed, whether those people are being killed by Bashar, ISIS, or the Tahalif, you're going to have tension, and that's what you have now. One of the things that's different now is that the Tahalif, or the alliance, the international alliance, has been launching their attacks. And this is not really new, but they've been attacking non-ISIS facilities. Now, the interesting thing in that regard is that they say that their target is ISIS. Okay? However, they're attacking places where there is no ISIS presence, like, for example, the attack that took place in Aqma. So there's a lot of anger that's in the hearts of the people, and there are demonstrations that are scheduled to take place, I think, in that city today, if I'm not mistaken, because the people are saying, "We thought that Turkey was our friend, and they were a friend of the revolution." And I think that Turkey needs to be careful, because they could find themselves having the only friend being in Washington, which is 8,000 miles away and surrounded by nothing but enemies. Now, at this juncture, I don't think it's gotten so bad that it's not redeemable, but if Turkey is going to allow the alliance to launch attacks on rebel groups, and I mean non-ISIS groups, that includes Jabhat al-Nusra, because Jabhat al-Nusra is a big part of this revolution. Now, whether the people like Jabhat al-Nusra or they don't like Jabhat al-Nusra, which is a part of al-Qaeda, the reality has to set in. If you remove the major groups, for example, like either an Ahrar Sham or a Jabhat al-Nusra, then you are crippling the revolution. And I think people need to really look at that dynamic and understand that the leader of Jabhat al-Nusra said that he has no plans, nor will he allow anybody to attack the West from Syrian soil. Of course, you're going to have to, ask yourself whether you believe it or not. That's entirely up to the person who's listening to what's being said. But to ignore the realities here on the ground, the alliance being willing to simply roll back all the gains of the revolution by attacking those forces that they deem to be enemies of them. Once again, we're going back to Western interests here, not Syrian people's interests. Because attacking Jabhat al-Nusra are not within the interests of the Syrian people, although the attack that took place in Atma, from what I understand, was not a Jabhat al-Nusra installation.
There's a lot of talk in mainstream media about Bashar al-Assad's position weakening. What are your thoughts?
Certainly. I was at the FUA offensive. If some of the people saw on my Twitter account and my Facebook account, I was actually just about 50 meters away from when underground explosives were detonated. And that was the burst that started the FUA, the fight there in FUA. And one of the interesting things that I did notice there is that while the fight on the ground was extremely fierce, and when I say extremely fierce, I'm talking about, you should duck down, but when there are bullets that are flying everywhere, where are you going to duck to? An errant bullet can catch you anywhere, so you kind of just get on with what you have to do, as opposed to worrying about whether I should hide under a rock or a tree. So, but one of the things that I did notice is that there were very, very, very few sorties that were being run on the rebel positions. Now, that's huge, because in the past, when there was the offensive at Azizia in Halab, I do remember that the rebel positions were lit up by planes. I could probably remember that in the first bit of time of that offensive, I only remember maybe two, maybe three sorties that were run by the air. So that would mean that they don't have the horses to be able to keep that up.
Can you elaborate a little bit further, Bilal, about the rift between ISIS and other resistance groups in Syria and statements attributed to Sheikh Abu Firas, who's a Shura member of Jabhat al-Nusra, with regards his view on ISIS?
Well, and in terms of the first thing that you asked, in terms of elaborating on the rift between ISIS and the other groups, there's nothing to elaborate on. The situation never improved. It has never been a good one, unless you want to go all the way back to the summer of 2013. But here we are two years later, and the situation is as bad as it ever was. Their policy has not changed. Either you are a part of ISIS, or you're an enemy to ISIS. Their propensity for making takfir on people is something that that has not changed. I did the interview with Sheikh Abu Firas al-Suri, who was an old and experienced person who was in Afghanistan as well, and so he's been a veteran of more than one jihad. Whether people would agree with his views or they would not agree with his views has nothing really to do with me, but I felt that these are some of the people that people outside of the territories needed to hear in order to get a decent picture in terms of what's going on here. That's what I see as my job here. not to make people like people or to dislike people, but just so that people can say, all right, I think I've got an idea that I didn't have before. Now I can have have more information to formulate an opinion, whether I like or don't like, support, don't support, or I just abstain, you know, being neutral regarding this group or this person or that person.
Finally, Bilal, in a situation as dire as the one in Syria, people are desperate for a glimmer of hope. Have you come across anything that gives you hope in terms of the medium to long term?
Most definitely. There is a you've got a lot of different groups that are here. And, you know, they're fighting, for the most part, amongst the Islamic groups outside of the ISIS entity. They are fighting generally for Islamic rule. And so they're all pretty much unified in that regard, which doesn't mean that they're one group. However, a group has emerged since the liberation of Idlib, and that's Jaish al-Fateh. Now, Jaish al-Fateh is a group that consists of other groups. Jaish al-Fateh is an umbrella group. And I think that this is really encouraging, and I'm starting to see, no, I'm not starting to see, I've been seeing ever since I returned here, which is probably about a month now, that there are so many cars and shops that have the Jaish al-Fateh logo. That's just showing that the people want unity. They want to see the rebel factions getting together. They're not happy to see that there's this group here, that group here, and they want to see that these people, these fighters, are coming together. And I think that in Jaish al-Fateh, they are seeing that. They saw the liberation of Idlib. Jaish al-Fateh was the group that was leading the fray in Fuwar, which was a successful offensive, because it was designed to relieve the pressure of their fighters, 1,500 fighters that which were in Zebedani. And that was successful against Iranian forces and Hezbollah forces from Lebanon. So, yes, there are many, many glimmers, not even glimmers, I'm not going to say glimmers, I want to say rays of hope. And I think that there's some good things that may be coming in the future if the groups can put their squabbles on the side for a little while.
Let's hope and pray for that. Bilal, jazakumullah for your time. Much appreciated.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Assalamu alaikum to all the brothers and sisters there in Johannesburg. And that's it. I'll talk to you guys another time.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.